Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, December 15th, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Hi, cutie pie.
Hi, honey. Today, we have part two of my chat with the brilliant erotic author, Donna George Story. She joins us again this week to finish the conversation we began last week. As you know, this is just the latest installment in my series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. If you somehow missed part one of this charming and informative discussion, look for last week's podcast number 91 in the podcast archive on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Special announcement. I've just received word that our guest's erotic novel, Amorous Woman, has just been named to the San Francisco Chronicle sex columnist Violet Blue's top 10 sexy book gift list. And let me tell you, Miss Violet is the grand poobah of all things erotic. If she says Amorous Woman is hot, you know it's hot. But then again, all you have to do is listen to Donna's podcast with me to know that. Again, this week, she will treat us to two luscious selections from her work, including the acclaimed Amorous Woman. Today's podcast is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How To Video Library. Even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How To Video Library. You'll be able to find the link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video On Demand tab. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right there from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? So without further ado, let's get back to Donna, who is patiently waiting for me to shut up. Welcome back, Donna, and thank you again for joining us. I've been just dying to get picking at your mind again since where we left off last week. We were talking about vocabulary and the changes in perceptions of what is erotic and what is art, and I found that fascinating. One of the things that I would like to turn to this week is writing for a female audience different than writing for a male audience in your mind?
Well, I have two answers to that. One is the more idealistic response, which is writing for an ideal reader who transcends gender, and he or she is a sympathetic listener to what I'm trying to say and willing to give him or herself over to me, body, mind, and spirit, like a lover, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's my ideal. And I wrote my novel, Amorous Woman, and all of my stories as a way to express the truth of my experience sexually or culturally or whatever. And men and women have both said they've enjoyed it. So that's kind of the ideal thing. But then I realized that there are sort of different cultures in erotica for men and women. And I can talk about my perceived differences if you like.
I'd like that very much. Yeah. Yes, please.
And when I've had certain gigs, so to speak, I've tried to guide my work in what I think is that direction. And it's going to come across like a stereotype, but I guess that can't be helped. I mean, I think there are lots of readers who aren't this way at all, and I love them. But I, for example, mentioned maybe that I wrote for Playboy's Cyber Club.
Last week, yes.
Yeah, and there I was trying to be true to myself, but also trying to make sure there wasn't too much of that silly relationship stuff. And there was a lot of the sex and so forth. And in my own reading of various kinds of erotica, let's say it's a continuum, Penthouse Letters and more male-focused things.
Right.
And I think, you know, male erotica or pornography or whatever also tends to be more visual. So
yes.
Written word is more towards the feminine side anyway. But you have, say, Penthouse Letters, and then you have Erotic Romance, a thriving business,
yes,
on the other side. And when I read them, I'm always kind of looking at it as a cultural scholar of sorts, like, what are the fantasies here that seem to turn people on? And my observations are the following. You can argue with me if you like. Argument is always good. But in the sort of male audience stories, the kind of fantasies I see are fantasies of abundance, endless partners, endless orgasms. Mm. And most of all, the encounters start up very easily. You don't have to court anybody. You don't have to have a messy relationship. You just have this willing partner of either sex who's ready now and wants it over and over. So
that, and then they go away.
Then they go away. And sex with strangers is really popular. Like the best sex of your life with a stranger. And some women have told me they've had the best sex of their life with a stranger, but I haven't. So that's a little bit, I step back from it and analyze it as like a pop culture critic rather than somebody who is drawn into the story. And then for women, what I've noticed is this fantasy of the heroine, taming a promiscuous James Bond-like male.
Right.
So he's out there having the endless orgasms and endless partners. But when he meets her, everything changes, and his heart is aroused into monogamy. And in erotic romance, they have lots of hot and varied sex. I will give them that, some hot, sizzling stuff. But it's always, you're the one I want, honey.
Yeah.
So those are the two. And so I think you can't, if you're going to try to make it as an erotic romance writer, you have to have that, or you're not going to make it very far.
Yes.
So I think there is a difference commercially in that way.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, yeah. I'm imagining that for a male audience, it's fast and down and dirty kind of thing, and for a female audience, it's a little bit more florid, a little bit more focused on the interaction of people as opposed to just bumping parts.
Right. But there are exceptions. Sometimes I want it dirty.
Yeah.
I want the stranger I don't have to talk to afterwards,
yeah,
you know, as
exactly.
a fantasy.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I have rarely tried to write from the point of view of a man. I did do it a couple of times, and that was very interesting. It was a real stretch for me, and I think I learned a lot from it. I mean, I had my husband and some other male readers read it and say, is this okay? I was really concerned.
Yes,
did this pass muster? And they said yes, but I think men are a little bit easier on women writers than women are on male writers, or at least I am. If a man is writing as a woman, I'm watching him carefully to see if he gets it wrong. And many of them do a fantastic job, actually.
Yeah.
You know, they're good.
But some do get it wrong.
Yeah, some do get it wrong, and I'm right there on them. Oh, no, that's not right.
Yeah. And it can be just as, you know, it could be building up beautifully, and then a word passes, and you go, oh, you blew it. You blew it. It's very interesting. It's very, like, I could, you know, I'm not an erotic writer in any way, shape, or form, but as a gay man, I would find it almost impossible to write from the perspective of a straight man. I mean, I couldn't imagine. I mean, I think I would have much greater ease writing from a woman's point of view, a straight woman's point of view. I don't think I could write from a lesbian point of view.
That's
interesting. It is interesting. My frame of reference obviously is lacking. Oh, what are you gonna do?
That's fine. Do what you love and do it well. You don't have to do
everything. It's true. It's true. It's true. So a distinction is often made between erotic art and erotica on one hand and pornography on the other. All depict or describe the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking. But there is a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression. Where does the difference lie for you?
Well, you know, some people claim there isn't, but I do believe there is on this continuum. And this may sound familiar. You mentioned this before, but for me, porn is sex between bodies, so it's a focus on that.
Uh-huh.
And erotica brings in the whole person, the feelings, the memories, and fantasies.
Uh-huh.
But I think also I would say porn is a genre literature with certain expectations that you must fulfill as a writer, and if you don't, you're kind of punished by the readers and the critics and the publishers.
Yes.
If you're an erotic romance writer who's always having a sad ending where the hero doesn't, you know, marry you or become, you know, your boyfriend, mm-hmm. you keep doing that, you're not going to get new submissions. I think erotica can challenge expectations and surprise people. They're more willing to take it. They're expecting mm-hmm. Their expectations to be challenged.
Yeah. Or surprised even, right? Yes?
Yeah, they want something different. They want to be unsettled a little bit, mm-hmm. maybe not too much, but the genre reader wants to be excited but maybe not unsettled. And another thing, I'm going on and on here, but porn is a wishful thinking. It's how you want it to be, a place where you can have all those things you can't really have in life. And I think erotica allows for a bit of reality and truth in some form. I think a lot of erotica is fantasy and does smooth over ugly things we have to deal with in our real lives, but there's room for that reality. And then finally, kind of the intent, porn, it doesn't have to be this, but, you know, at the extreme, it's commercial. People are doing it for money. They're yes. kind of churning it out. Right. And for me, erotica has an element of love, you know, mm-hmm. the amateur in the original meaning of the word.
Yeah. Well, I that certainly resonates with me because one of the movies that I produced through Daddy-O Productions is called Country Time, Country Fine, and it's very popular for some groups of people and just a huge turnoff for others. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't my intention to do that, but it's much more romantic and alluring and seductive, and there's lots and lots of foreplay. And there, I mean, the whole movie is almost an hour long, and there's actually just, you know, an orgasm at the end of the movie. And so many people like it because it's so different from
yeah.
what they understand to be gay porn. At the same time, I mean, because there's so much kissing and there's so much romance, but other people, you know, hate it because they're expecting X amount of, you know, orgasms, cum shots and stuff like that per 20 minutes. And right. if you don't deliver that, you know, then you've failed as a pornographer.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was one of my early movies, and I really didn't realize that, you know, there were rules and expectations along those lines. And I certainly found out later, don't you know.
But it was probably really wonderful to get the response from the people who appreciate
yeah,
it as well.
Yeah, and you yeah. know, and people, you know, would say, because my movies are not famous for like close-ups of, you know, penetration and whatnot, and which is the purpose, I guess, for a lot of other pornography. And so reviewers would say about my movies and say, well, how do we know that guy is getting fucked?
yeah.
And I said, you know, if you cannot, first of all, I said that's a terrible comment about our industry, because you're suggesting that most of the shit is faked, and that's really unfortunate because, you know, that says a lot about who we are. And I said at the same time, I said if you can't look in the person's face and know for sure that that person is getting fucked, then there's something desperately wrong.
Mm.
And that I hold to that today.
Yeah, yeah, I think those that more indirect approach is actually a lot sexier, but that might just be me.
Yeah. has reading or writing erotica empowered you as a woman, or perhaps even enriched your life sexually or sensually?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, I again, being kind of the social critic here, I think there's this idea that erotica is something you read as a poor substitute for real sex with a partner. It's something shameful.
Uh-huh.
And the pornographer is this scribbling masturbator who can't get real sex or whatever. It's just this image of this awful, you know, booby prize.
Uh-huh.
But I think if you treat erotica with respect, it can offer you a lot more, just like any sexual partner. And I often get the question, how much of my work is autobiographical?
Uh-huh.
People are really interested in that.
Yeah.
And some of it is, some of it isn't.
Period interest, we might add.
Yeah, some of it is and some of it isn't. But, you know, certainly on the basic level, it is my sensibility, my sensations and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'd be like totally lying. I think that
yeah.
we wouldn't be very good
yeah.
if that was the case.
And we would know it, too, would we not?
We would know it. But really, it's more of a, a broader, again, a kind of a sensual awakening. And I use the Wizard of Oz as a way to illustrate this when Dorothy steps from Kansas into Oz and everything is suddenly in color. Mm-hmm. That's what it was like for me to start writing about sex, the sexual experience. I had to pay such attention to get it right, to translate it into words. And that made the experience itself much more intense and fascinating. I was also motivated to try some new things. I'd had a pretty darn good sex life. I was happy with it. But just because I was trying new things in my work, I would try new things in my life as well, and my husband and I were inspired to try new things. It just got us a lot more excited. So that was cool. And then another thing is, I really am into telling the truth, like this is a way of telling the truth.
Yes.
And men, the authorities have defined female sexuality in the public sphere for so long that writing my own story is a way of talking back to society, porn, history.
Exactly.
Telling it like it is, even if really only a few people read it, it's still very empowering. And I think everybody should try writing erotica. For one thing, it helps you focus and pay attention, and also it empowers you. It gives you that voice. And I think there are benefits from reading it as well, if I can go there.
Yes, by all means.
Back to cooking. I think, you know, you can take flour, mix it with water, and make hardtack out of it, and it'll nourish you. Or you can figure out how to make some sourdough bread in this luscious, airy, fragrant, wonderful thing. And I think the same is true of reading erotica. Again, it can be a shameful thing because you don't have a partner. Or you can read a sexy story and do more with it. And I don't know if this is... but anyway... If you pay attention to what turns you on, for example, again, not in this real, you know, put on your glasses and take notes sort of way, but just over time, what kinds of things are turning me on? Are there specific words or images or characters that I want to read about again? And you get to know yourself. You get to kind of be a sightseer in your own sexual psyche with the erotic stories as a guide. What's working for me?
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of interesting. With a partner, even I find it hard to talk about sex with my husband sometimes. I mean, we do. We definitely do.
Right.
But it's not, you know, supposedly I guess I should be on the more enlightened side of it. I can only imagine for people who aren't writing about it all the time like I am. But it can be hard to put these things into words. And I think you can use erotica. For example, you can say, I really like this story. Do you want to read it? What do you think? Or... Mm-hmm.
As
read
an invitation, basically, of, you know, maybe we can do that too kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe. It's kind of like the Japanese way of having a go-between in marriage, so you don't have
to lose
face.
Yes.
You know, you can say, what do you think? And maybe try to have a guided conversation about it, not like I thought it was sick or something, but, you know, I kind of like the scene where she did this, and maybe that'll lead into something new and exciting. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, but I think it really can be more than just some shameful thing you use to touch yourself impurely.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, it legitimizes sexuality and sexual expression. I mean, if someone goes to a bookstore, a real bookstore, and picks up a real book, you know, albeit of erotica, I mean, that legitimizes... what they're going to find within the covers of that book, so much more than, you know, if somebody was, you know, just, you know, whispering in their ear. I mean, it's like appearing on television or on the radio when we're doing this interview or when you're being interviewed elsewhere. It legitimizes this in the eyes of the viewer, and they say, well, okay, if she can talk about that, then, you know, possibly I can actually go and read some. And so I think it's a wonderful thing. And as the suggestion that you make about how this might improve someone's sexuality alone or with others, is, you know, it's a way of getting in the mood. And I think that's what, you know, pornography, the original word of meaning of that word was the writing of the courtesans, was a mood setter.
Yes, yes, yes. As you're waiting in the waiting area or something for your encounter.
In the lobby of the temple, you know, before you get to the Vestal Virgins. Wonderful. Good. Maybe this would be a good place for us to talk about your personal take on erotica. I mean, we've touched on it several times before. As we know, there are several plausible definitions floating around out there, but I want to get your specific take on it. What does erotic in art mean to you?
In art. Well, so again, for me, when you use the word erotic, there has to be more going on than just a dirty, forbidden image.
That's
sort
right.
of thing.
That's good.
For me, it involves really the, well, everybody has says and knows the brain is the most important, you know,
Kinsey
sexual
said it's organ,
the biggest, erogenous, and so forth.
Biggest sex organ.
Exactly, and it is for me, and I like to be get my mind as juiced as my genitals. So to put erotic and art together, it has to have that thoughtful component to it in its creation, and also provoke thought in me as well. I guess, like, oh, that's interesting. Like, just sort of, you know, make me wonder, make me make some new connection there. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's erotic art for me.
Cool beans. As an author, and I know you write a lot of other stuff besides the stuff that might be commonly understood as erotic, what makes your erotic stuff different from your other work, I mean, besides the obvious?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, this goes back to feeling empowered. In a way, erotic artists and writers especially are speaking the unspeakable, so we're breaking new ground, and I found that more exciting. Again, you know, any given story, you could say, well, there are lots of stories about that out there. But I think, again, it, sort of culturally, it's only been, say, 10 or 15 years that we've been able to write and publish this sort of thing openly. It was there. But
women
was,
in particular.
Yeah, yes. Women in particular, exactly. So that that element of excitement, sort of doing something politically important, makes my erotica different from the other work that I do.
Yeah. God, that's so great. I mean, I think of all the stuff that was missing in history because women had no voice.
Very
little. Goodness. Are there topics that you gravitate toward, topics that you avoid?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this. I love professor sex, academics, their offices, and their students,
uh-huh.
and with other people. No.
Tweed
like,
coats and sensible shoes. And
making up dirty assignments for
uh-huh.
their students.
Exactly, good
like
for
that.
You.
And, you know, I was just reading a friend of mine, Sage Vivant, she's a great erotica writer as well. She wrote this book, Your Erotic Personality, and it's kind of a fun book, kind of based on the quizzes in women's magazines.
Uh-huh.
And I read through that, and what am I? Well, I think I'm both a watcher and a show-off at the same time.
No
I think
kidding.
That ties into, that's a voyeur and a exhibitionist.
Exactly.
That ties into the creative process. You're watching, you're observing life, you're getting inspired by that, and then when you write, you're showing your stuff. So that's a scenario that shows up a lot in my work. I have a little section that shows that if you're interested.
Oh,
in
yes, please, by all means.
Reading from me.
I'm thirsty from last week.
Yes, well, this is what I was talking about, an attempt at writing from the male point of view. So if you think I'm failing miserably, you can stop me anytime, okay?
All right.
So this was recently published in Susie Bright's X, The Erotic Treasury with Chronicle, a really mm-hmm. nice Christmassy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is called Yes. And it's about a couple where the man is kind of the one in charge, sort of. It's a little more complicated than that. But it's a new relationship, and their intimacy is deepening through these sexual games. And the one I'm going to describe is literally a parlor game after a small dinner party when this couple is enjoying dinner with the man's friend from his college days. And the boss, the dom, suggests they play a game called Secret Desires. And this is
cool.
Not the whole scene, but this is the juicier part, I think. So I'm going to read a section of Secret Desires. And this is in the man's voice, so I'm now a man. Okay. I'll tell you a little secret about my girlfriend, Sean, old buddy. She likes to show off. You should see her when we go to parties. She's practically spilling out of her shirt, and her jeans ride so low you get an eye full of cleavage there, too. I don't know why she looks so prim and proper tonight. Let's let Sean see the real you, sweetie. Why don't you take off your blouse for him? She sits there, without moving, for the longest 5 seconds of your life. You realize you're holding your breath. Even after all these months, you can never be totally sure you've gotten it right. You lead her to the edge of the cliff and give her that nudge, but she decides if she'll fly or fall. And wherever she goes, she takes you there with her. Slowly, very slowly, her hand moves to the first button. You let out a sigh of relief and shift in the chair to adjust your boner. She inches her blouse over her shoulders and pulls her arms from the sleeves. At your command, she takes off her bra, too, and sets it carefully beside her on the sofa. Eye candy's the word for her now. Her breasts are so pretty and tasty-looking, the nipples like discs of raspberry candy on the creamy skin. Why don't you show Sean what you like to do to your tits when you're alone and feeling in the mood? Jesus, Sean murmurs. She's being a good girl, doing just what you ask, rubbing her palms in slow circles over her breasts, twisting the stiffened tips between her fingers. It's not just an act, either. Her chest is flushed, and she's squirming and sighing. This is great, honey. Sean is really getting a better sense of you as a person, you say. But I don't think he understands yet how much this is turning you on. Why don't you take off your pants and show our guest how wet your pussy is, too? She winces under the blindfold and flushes a brighter shade of pink. But a second later, she's shimmying out of her pants and underwear. Spread your legs, you say. She obeys. From where you're sitting, you can see her pink folds glistening with moisture. Sean's eyes bulge. The cords stand out in his neck. Spread your legs a little more, you say. That's right. Let's get a good stretch. Now I want you to play with yourself. That's the part you like best, isn't it? Showing guys how horny you are. She lets out a little, oh, of shame and desire. Her hand moves slowly as if she's dragging it through water. Her fingers nestle between her legs. Will she really do anything, you ask? Part of you wants to stop now. Send Sean off to bed with his fist in his dreams. But that voice fills your head again. More. I want more. Yes, you've gotten our guest quite worked up with your show, you horny little slut. I'll bet he wouldn't mind it at all if you bent over and sucked his cock now. After all, that would only be polite. She nods, dreamlike, and moves closer to him, groping her way like a blind person. Kneel between his legs, you tell her. She crouches and fumbles for a zipper. Sean snaps out of zombie mode to help her pull his pants down. His cock springs free. He's big, but not so big you have anything to worry about. She doesn't seem to need directions anymore because right away she starts licking his shaft with the flat of her tongue, quick, teasing little laps. Then she tickles the sweet spot beneath his swollen cockhead with the tip of her tongue. He groans and paws her hair. You're enjoying the view, the way her jaw muscles bulge and her cheeks hollow out when she takes them between her lips. She's definitely making an effort to do her best. You wonder if her eyes are closed under the scarf, and if she's pretending she's someone else, or he's someone else. You wonder if it's turning her on as much as it is you. Sean is going crazy, humping up into her mouth, his face all twisted up with lust. And finally, he gets the words out that have probably been on his mind for some time. Hey, is it okay if I fuck her? Absolutely. But remember, we're still playing Secret Desire, so you'll use up your turn. You laugh, tossing him a condom. Then you add, but no anal, okay? You want to keep that part of her for yourself. Yeah, sure, no problem, Sean mumbles. He's not going to press his luck. You wait just long enough to see what he's going to do. He lays her out on the sofa and gets on top. She grunts softly when he enters her, then she turns her head toward you, just like the night you met. And just like that night, you sense the connection, through the scarf, through the hot, damp air of the room. She feels you watching, and that's the only thing that matters. She tells you this is exactly what was going through her mind later. Sure, Sean is the one pumping away on top of her and kneading her breast like bread dough, but he's doing it for his own pleasure. He isn't thinking of her. That's the difference. You're always thinking of her.
Wow. Holy cow. I think I'm having tendencies. It's so funny. I mean, I mentioned this when Kay and I were talking at the first interview in this series, and when she was reading her stuff, and I told her, I said that because I'm so terribly dyslexic, reading has always been very difficult for me, but listening to someone read is just It's a turn on to have somebody read the phone book to me.
Well, it's sad that this pleasure is kind of fading from our culture. I've done a few readings for my book, but people say, oh, it doesn't sell any books, they're not so popular, but really, it's such a nice thing. It's a good way to connect with your audience.
And you have a different sound to your voice when you're doing the male character. I mean, it's not pronounced, like, you're not like gruff or anything, but I could tell that there was something different going on there.
I was in someone else's skin for a little bit. Yeah.
Excellent.
That was fun.
Let's focus on your work, Amorous Woman.
Okay.
Can you give us some background?
Yes. Well, Amorous Woman has been simmering in my head for quite a long time since I first read Ihara Saikaku's erotic classic from the 17th century. The original title is Koshoku Ichidai Onna, or The Life of an Amorous Woman, in
That's
translation.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, it is easy, but I spent a lot of time, a lot of time for what I can claim is progress in Japanese. But anyway, I read that as part of my study of Japanese literature. And the novel follows the adventures of a woman with a highly charged libido, you know, that sort of classic character in erotica. And basically, she sleeps her way around 17th century Japan in almost any role available to a woman
God
at that time. Yeah. So she has this sense of curiosity and freedom that actually was impossible at the time. It was such a repressed time politically that you had to stay where you were and do the government had its eye on you. But this is a fantasy. So she got to be everything and do everything. Hmm. And even at the time I admired her modern spirit, I thought, this is kind of a modern character here. She's a feminist. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what it would be like to translate that into the adventures of an American woman in the 1980s in Japan. So I was thinking about that, and it would kind of be autobiographical and so on and so forth. And when I had the opportunity to write a novel, I basically stole the plot from Saikaku and then used some of my own experiences living in Japan, as well as a lot of wishful thinking and fantasy. So that's the background of it. There is a lot of my life in it. Many of the characters are composites. And for example, I have a marriage meeting. It's really a blind date with her future husband. I did not marry a Japanese man, but I did have a marriage meeting like that. So standing there in Kyoto Station, looking around, wondering, who is the guy I'm supposed to have a date with? That really happened.
To follow quickly after your last reading, do you have something from that you would like to share?
I do. This is all a follow-on from that blind date or marriage meeting I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
And what was interesting with my real-life experience, and I put it in my book, is that in public, my boyfriend would be very proper and polite, never touch or anything.
Yes.
But then you get him in his apartment, he was wild. So I have that element in this section. Lydia and her future husband, Yuji, they sort of have phone sex because they live in different cities before they get married. And they're looking forward to Sunday when he's off from work and they go to his apartment and have a wonderful time. So this is what happens when they first get inside and he lets his hair down and takes his glasses off and so forth. So they're in Yuji's apartment and this is part of what happens. He has her on the kitchen table. Yuji moved back to the edge of the table, unbuckled his belt, and struggled out of his jeans. Then he pushed my knees up again and entered me, slowly sliding in full length. I gasped. I'd never fucked on a table before, and his cock seemed to fill me deeper than ever before. It seemed to have a similar effect on Yuji. His eyes were closed, his head thrown back, and he was moving inside me as if against his will. I always liked it better when he was as crazy as I was, bucking and grimacing. My real goal was to make him come so hard he couldn't help groaning out loud so the neighbors would know everything he did with the foreign girl in his apartment on Sunday afternoons. I liked it when he was bad because of me. But Yuji seemed intent on carrying out the story just as planned to bring me to a second climax. Now his hand was on my nipple, tweaking and twisting. His other snaked between us to tease my clit. Could I come again so soon in this strange new position? I'd never managed it before, but it was certainly worth a try. I thought of those neighbors again, crowded all around us. in spite of his precautions. They probably already knew what we were doing. They probably planned their Sundays around it. Next door, the housewife in a frilly apron had her ear to the wall, straining for the sounds as her hands crept beneath her skirt and slipped under the elastic of her panties to find her swollen pink clit. Downstairs sat a bright-eyed grandma and grandpa peeling tangerines around their kotatsu. With each thump and groan from above, they share a lewd and knowing glance. Do you think that horny foreigner spread out on a table like a whore will have another orgasm, Grandma? I hope so, Granddad. I do like to hear her scream. They wanted me to come. All of Japan wanted me to come. They were waiting. To the other side of us, a student with one of those victory headbands was begging me. Please, Honorable Miss Foreigner, have an orgasm so I can get back to my studies and enter a national university. How could I let them down? They were crowding into the room now, watching, reaching over to pinch my nipples with their chopsticks, spreading my legs to make my pussy grip Yuji even tighter. Come for us, the whole nation wants you to come. Do it for Japan. Yuji was waiting for me too, I could tell by his slow, careful thrusts. The head of his dick was knocking against some sweet spot up there, something I'd never felt before, a pleasure just short of pain. Do it for us, Lydia-san. Do it for Japan. I moaned, too loud, but the thrill of transgression pushed me higher. We were bad, so bad. Even Yuji was losing it. He was grunting now as he worked his hips faster, his cock taking charge, selfish in its urge for release. But I was selfish too. Now I was crying out with each thrust. The housewife had collapsed on the floor, thighs spread wide as she strummed desperately. The grandma was fondling her husband's cock, a thick purple stalk sprouting from his kimono. The student was already coming, tissues poised to catch the white banners of jism arcing from the swollen head of his uncut tool. Yuji was coming too. I could tell by the oof and the sudden shift to long rhythmic strokes as he emptied himself into me. Go along with the group, Lydia-san. That's what we do in Japan. Arching back, I hammered my ass up to meet his last strokes, and yes, it was coming. I was coming. We were all coming together in one sighing, trembling mass of flesh and fire. Yuji stayed with me until the shudders subsided, eyes closed, his hands resting on my hips as if we were engaged in some blissful meditation. I sat up and rested my arms on his shoulders. That was good, I whispered. It's always good. He smiled and opened his eyes. They melted into me like chocolate, something sweet and comforting that a child liked to eat. Yuji never said he loved me. He didn't have to. In this place, we didn't need words. You're such a wonderful audience. You're so great.
I'm easily amused. No, I got to tell you, that there's something about, you know, the cross-cultural thing that is just absolutely one. And there's nothing better, and I said this to Jeremy, interestingly enough, because he also has a humorous component to a lot of his work, and I love, you know, sex and laughing.
Yeah.
I mean, when I come, I think it's joyful, and I laugh, and partners look at me like, what did I do wrong? And well, it's nothing about wrong. It's mm-hmm. about a release. It's an emotional release along with the physical.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, I have to mention that traditionally Japanese pornographic pictures were called laughing pictures, and when you masturbate, you laugh alone.
No kidding. I did not know that.
Yeah, I love that. Mm.
So today, as we mentioned before, erotic artists seem to abound, and there's an abundance of amazingly good erotica out there too. Although in some circles, this genre is still not accepted as mainstream. Is that your experience as well?
It is. I've had great response for this novel, and a lot of people surprised me who seemed pretty, you know, buttoned down, and they enjoyed it and bought it and so forth. Mm-hmm. But in trying to market the book, sell it to bookstores, get it reviewed, I faced a lot of prejudice. And just prejudice being, you write erotica, this must suck, this must be trash, we can't have it in our wonderful store.
That's right.
Just like that, you know, they don't look
at it. And there must be something desperately wrong with you.
Yeah, you know, I have used this. I'm a PhD from Stanford. I wrote a dirty book, and it does get people interested. I kind of use it against them in that way. But
exactly.
many you know, ladies with frowns tell me, "We do not sell this. Go away."
Yeah.
And of course, some review sites won't. Many review sites won't accept it. Publishers
right.
Weekly and all that categorically,
right.
no. So although
which
a
is
lot
too
of
bad
they,
because I think if they actually did review and they promoted what is really good, a lot of the dross would just go away.
I agree. So, but I think, and there are some writers, I get the feeling, they're like, "Oh, you write erotica, that I'm not their equal," even though, well, I'm being a little bitchy here, but, you know, I think what I wrote is as good or better than what they wrote, just because theirs doesn't have any sex, and mine's
right.
probably more interesting.
You go ahead and be bitchy, girl.
Yeah, but just because it is frank about sex, and it aims to arouse. You know, there is a lot of sexuality in literary fiction, and some of it does arouse. There are really hot scenes that I love, but most of the time it has that depressive component, like
right.
the ugly side of sex.
Right.
And if you write something that's clearly meant to arouse, especially if you
yeah.
do it a lot, then you're not literary anymore.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, just so schizophrenic about our ridiculous culture, because, you know, our culture is awash in sexual imagery and, you know, to sell products, generally speaking. And yet to do a work of art involving sexuality is somehow wrong, or it completely fucks with my head.
Yeah, well, here's my theory. If sexuality was okay, we could talk about it comfortably and we could be adults about it, then it would not have the same power to get us to buy things, and
right.
they would lose an awful lot
oh,
of power.
Maybe you're right
so
there.
They're interested in keeping us repressed.
Yeah. Is it possible for you to eroticize something that you don't find particularly sexy?
Well, I'd say there are some cases where I couldn't do that, but actually I found in writing short stories, what's happening in erotica writing right now is an editor will put out a call for a certain theme.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the piece I read, the second piece I read, was originally written for He's on Top, edited by Rachel Kramer Bussell, so a BDSM
right.
collection.
Right.
And that's not really, I don't know about that world. I know it is like kind of a separate world. I know nothing about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Rachel. I like writing for her. So I thought, I'll give this a try and try to get into that mindset in my
mm-hmm.
own vanilla
mm-hmm.
kind of believable
mm-hmm.
way. I didn't
mm-hmm.
pretend I was really this hardcore, you know, submissive woman or anything.
Or dominatrix.
Exactly. I just kind of took that power play and that dynamic and let my imagination go with it. And I found out, you know, I kind of liked the story that I wrote,
mm-hmm.
and I also learned more about myself, learned more about that dynamic, learned more about the sexiness of power and power games.
Yes.
And so I guess it started out being something I didn't find sexy and ended up being something I find sexy, so
exactly.
I was able to grow as a person and an artist. So
yes. We should check back with you in a year and find out if you're
whips
and chains,
gee,
girl.
I might be running out of things. Go cycle back.
I can't wait. Oy. So besides the written word, I also know that you've tried your hand at visual art, too. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, well, this was a collaboration with my husband because he's the techie guy. He did the iMovie part, but I did some of it as well. I made a book trailer for Amorous Woman, and we posted it on YouTube. And
I hope to have that up. I certainly will have a link to it if I can't put it up myself on the site. So
we had so much fun with that, and what I did was I went and picked out some of my favorite Japanese erotic prints. I mentioned in my first passage, Suzuki Harunobu is Kimura's favorite erotic artist. Well, guess what? He's my favorite erotic artist because I do like the fact he doesn't have those oversized genitals. Those are
right.
interesting, but I kind of find them off-putting.
Yes.
But Harunobu also has very interesting facial expressions. Maybe that ties back with the emotions and the broader sort of whole person part of erotica versus porn.
Yeah.
So I love
mort,
him.
As the French say.
Yes.
The little death.
I'm sorry,
The little death.
Oh, yes.
The grimace, the sexual grimace.
Yes, Yes, when they look kind of sad too. So mm-hmm. this floating world, we refer to commercial sex and that sort of thing as the floating world, and that is tied in with this Buddhist idea of evanescence and so forth. So there is a sadness to sex as well, and he captures that. So I picked out some of my favorite erotic prints, and not just him. There are others that are really cool and pretty yeah. hot, actually hot and cool at the same time. Yeah.
And you did really good with that visual art. So. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. And then, you know, because it's
all... And tell the hubby we really appreciate his input.
Well, it's nice. And I also included some photos from my archives, a recent trip to Japan, and then way back when I was a young innocent thing experiencing Japan for the first time. So you can see pictures of me, too, mixed in. And then I do a voiceover. I read from parts of the work. And that was really
brilliant.
Fun to do.
It's well done. What do you look for in the works of other erotic artists or written erotica?
Well, I'm open. I like to be surprised, and I like to be challenged as well. But generally speaking, I prefer believable characters and situations,
yes.
So something where I don't have to suspend disbelief too much. I can
yeah.
do it a bit, mm-hmm. but I...
10 inches
like
is a little bit too much?
I'm sorry?
10 inches is a little bit too much.
Yeah, maybe. And then, of course, the beauty of the language and
uh-huh.
and the care that the writer takes. Uh-huh. And then I'm not speaking of visual arts. That's sort of different. I tend to be less critical of that. I just
uh-huh.
respond to the
right.
image. And I do love erotic photography and art, you
yes.
know, so...
We have some brilliant photographers coming up, and we've had some really great visual artists so far in this series, so I'm really, really pleased.
Yeah, I've checked out some of the websites. Wonderful. So.
Who are your inspirations?
Well, I have to say that the erotica writing community I've discovered is just a wonderful group of people, and they keep me going. Writing.
Jeremy said the same thing.
Publishing is a hard thing, and then with erotica, you get that extra prejudice, and like in his case, he has to keep it quiet. So
yes.
you meeting like-minded, supportive people, they're really very cheerful, much nicer than literary fiction writers, I have to say. So they are key, and there are some wonderful editors who support our work and have great anthologies we can be published in.
Yes.
And I also have to mention like the original pioneers of the erotica revolution, like Nancy Friday, Susie Bright, and Marcy Shiner, and these women, they're kind of like our Betty Friedan and Gloria
yes.
Steinem, you know,
right.
they got things going, and we
yes.
owe a lot to them.
Yes. And your sexual heroes, are they one and the same thing, do you suppose, or...?
Partially. But, you know, I was thinking about this, too. It's a post-heroic age. I was just thinking, anybody who tells the truth about sex, anybody who expresses what's really going on, and even if it's like a woman finally confessing, or I guess this wouldn't be a man, really, but a woman finally confessing to her partner that she was faking orgasm and she wants
yes.
to get some real ones, you know,
yeah.
small heroes on that kind of scale,
yeah.
anybody who's willing to have the courage to speak out, they're
yeah.
my heroes. So.
That's my big... mission in life is getting people to speak honestly about their sexuality, first of all to themselves and then to whoever else is in their life that is important to them. I mean, life is just way too short for
yeah.
dishonesty in that regard.
Yes, doing a great service.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. What does the future hold for you and your work?
Well, I have an idea for a second novel that is another journey. It's another journey to another time rather
uh-huh.
than necessarily place. I'm going to look at the American sexual past and that
wow.
culture. It's going to be a historian, a professor. I love Professor Sexton,
mm-hmm.
I say. So she's going to be trying to get tenure, but what she's really interested in is sexuality and
mm-hmm.
and the history of sexuality
wow,
in America.
How cool.
She's pulled professionally, and I'm going to get to do lots of interesting research, so it'll be fun.
Good. Any advice for the novice writer of erotica?
Well, a couple of things. An erotic story needs the same elements as a good story of any genre. You need conflict, believable characters. You need to do nice things with the language and give your reader a reason to give you their time.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, there is this element of exploring what fascinates you, being honest about
yes.
sexuality, and giving us your juice, giving us your truth.
Yeah.
The other
right.
thing is, like a good sexual encounter for a woman anyway, it takes time. It's not going to be something you sit down, write an erotic story, and the editors are going to come begging to publish it. It,
right.
It takes a while to get it right. So
right.
Don't be patient.
Good. Our time is up. In fact, we are way over. I am so delighted. This is going to be my big Christmas gift to my audience, that this extra special long
Oh, really? You can cut if you need to, really.
Oh, never. Are you kidding? Not a word. But before we go, can you give us your web address again and walk us around your site?
Okay, it's www.DonnaGeorgeStory.com, and I have links to all kinds of good things. I have links to my stories available online and
right.
the print books I'm in. I have a link to my blog, my book trailer, radio interviews, and my Amorous Woman blog tour, and I have some podcasts available as well.
So soon to be added to.
Yes, this will be on there. You can listen to this there too.
So we then can buy your book through your website. Yes,
a signed copy. You can also buy it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Powell's, and a few of the independent booksellers in Northern California that allowed me to give them my erotic novel to sell. So
I love them.
It's available here and there in the UK. It was originally published there, so you can get it there, and on Amazon, Japan, Germany, France. So it's available around the world.
Cool beans. Well, I will be sure to add some links under my posting. Thank you so much for your generous presentation and your precious time. We are all truly richer for the experience.
Thank you so much, and happy winter solstice holidays to everyone.
Yes, thank you. See you in cyberspace. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was a great show, huh? And such a long show, too. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. This is my last podcast for the year. I'm going to take the next 2 weeks off to rest my mouth, don't you know? I'll return the first Monday after the new year, January 5th, 2009. So be sure to tune in then for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand.
No, you're doing it all wrong.
Oh, don't worry about it. There's no membership fee. This is a pay-for-bidnet kind of deal. Be sure to look for Dr. Dick's podcast on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe, and when you do, feel free to leave a comment. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? That's even better. Over and out.